Hello, I'm Ed Butler. Welcome to Business Daily from the BBC. Today, what a coronavirus outbreak might mean in one of the world's most crowded refugee camps.
It's going to spread incredibly quickly. It is absolutely my worst nightmare to think that we have allowed COVID to enter the camp.
And what about the world's 11 million convicts who are trapped in overcrowded prisons at the moment? At a time of crisis, why should we care about them?
Whatever you feel about prisoners, the fact of the matter is the people we know who are at higher risk are more likely to end up on a ventilator in a hospital taking up space that we can ill afford right now.
That's all to come in Business Daily from the BBC World Service. Some devotional singing there in a packed prison in the town of Lira in northern Uganda. I visited this facility a couple of years back, and it should be said that not much has changed in places like this since then.
So I'm standing here in a giant courtyard. There are a couple of trees above me. The sun is beating down. It's another hot morning here in Uganda. And around me are maybe 200 or 300 prisoners dressed in yellow, the uniform they have to wear. And they're sitting under the trees, those who can find the shade. I'm told here that you can't sleep because there is so little space. This prison is three times overcrowded, like so many of the prisons in Uganda, and they all have to sleep back to back, side to side. Even to roll over means the entire cell has to move at the same time.
It is devastating, it is inhuman, and I don't know, really. It is really such a devastating scenario. It's not good at all.
That's the voice of Isaac. He's one inmate in Lira prison. When I met him, he'd been on remand for more than 3 years for a crime that he said he hadn't committed. As it happens, about half of all Uganda's inmates have yet to see a judge for the charges that they're facing.
The truth of the matter is that we are very congested. This is a place where we sleep like an all. Find a place which was initially intended to keep like 20 people. You find there are about 100 people sleeping in the same place. Where I am, I think it was supposed to take not more than 24. But as I talk now, we are over 65 in the same ward, and you can imagine how we sleep. It is such a terrible situation.
The room is just a bare kind of concrete box, basically. There are a couple of small windows with bars, and can you breathe at night?
Breathe, we struggle, and we struggle with it that way. We have no option, of course.
Well, you get the idea, and you can imagine the implications of a highly infectious and potentially deadly viral infection breaking out in a place like this. There are 50,000 inmates in Uganda's prisons, and they are representative of hundreds of thousands of others across the poor world. What should be done about these people? These massively overcrowded facilities where healthcare and nutrition are primitive at the best of times. Doreen Namyalo-Kyaze is the Uganda-based Africa Programme Manager with the charity Penal Reform International.
One of the first steps the prison administration took is to ban visitations from outsiders. Unfortunately, that also includes the relatives of the detainees. So the prisons are out of bounds to the public. The other measure that was introduced is the setting up of task forces comprised of health workers to deal with any emergency situation. And also the other thing that would be of concern is the continued remanding of prisoners into prison that is going to go on, despite the fact that most of the prisoners will not be going to court during the period.
So does that mean that the prison population is going up right now?
Yes, it is going up right now. What is proposed is to set up isolation units within 80 prisons at the moment, isolation units where new arrivals would be quarantined for 14 days.
So a prison population which is already three times overcrowded is going to become even more overcrowded.
Yes. but also worrying is because of the limited financial resources within our establishments, not only in Uganda, but Africa at large. The banning of visitations means that prisoners would definitely have to rely entirely on the prisons, which is already overstretched and unable to meet most of the basic needs of the prisoners, foodstuffs and other supplements.
Other countries in the region have talked about releasing prisoners to reduce overcrowding. Is there any talk of that happening in Uganda?
No, unfortunately, no. No consideration has been provided yet to early releases.
Is there any word from the government about how long the courts are all going to be shut down?
The current shutdown was for 32 days, so towards the end of April. But then the cases are also growing per day. And new measures are introduced almost on a daily basis.
And more people are being arrested for breaking quarantine rules.
Yes. Unfortunately, yes.
Dori Namyalo Kyaze. Well, I did manage to track down the spokesman for Uganda's prison service, Frank Baine, on a crackly phone line to ask him some of the points she raised. He told me that everything was being done in line with the president's specific directives.
Now that we are regulating who enters, we can suffer with our congestion inside as long as we increase the hygiene. The most important thing is not to get contaminated from outside.
Yeah, but all of your prison guards, your warders, are coming in and out every single day.
Well, they are under rigorous checks and cleaning, and the distance factor is very important.
Yeah. I'm wondering why you aren't letting out more prisoners. People in Ethiopia and in other countries are letting people out.
That is a question for the president, not for the prisons. The pardon is not a function of prisons.
I know, but half of your prisoners are on remand. They haven't even been convicted of anything. They just need to be on license.
47% are on remand. The decision to release inmates lies far beyond the authorities of Uganda Prison Service. So I would request that you press that question to the relevant authority.
Are you worried because you're stopping all of these visits to the prisoners? A lot of prisoners...
There's nobody who is not worried in this world, my brother. Even you, as you are talking, I'm sure you are worried. Everybody has a reason to worry. This disease has come and it is not a joke.
No, indeed. I'm just wondering if you're worried about the fact that you're not allowing any of the food that prisoners normally get from their relatives.
Having food from out is a luxury. The type of food we have can sustain the prisoners until such a time when we go back to normal practice. You see, this is not business as usual. It is survival first. The rest can come later.
You're confident the people in the prisons can survive because there is going to be a shortage of food and medicines in there, most likely, without visits.
Well, for your own information, we have had the emergency meetings with the Minister of Finance, and we are sure what we have in stock can take us for maybe 2-3 months. But I will assure by the time that runs out, we shall already have been reinforced. The government is aware and the government is working on it.
The spokesman for the Director of Prisons in Uganda, Frank Baine. Well, the problems facing Uganda's prison inmates are reflected across the African continent and beyond, of course. Many countries are choosing to release some petty offenders and those most at risk or nearing the end of their term. As mentioned, Ethiopia has granted an amnesty to some 4,000 inmates. But many governments see little political advantage in showing clemency to convicts, despite the immediate health risks. So prisons are one thing. What about the tens of millions of people worldwide who are now in refugee camps, fleeing hardship or conflict? This is the sound of the Moria camp on the island of Lesbos in Greece. It's a facility housing more than 20,000, mostly Syrian, refugees. Yasser is one young male resident.
Here are some water taps. There is no water inside it. There is no water. The trash is... are right next to them, so it's disgusting. People have no good access to doctor because about the crowding.
So has coronavirus reached this camp yet? Well, I asked Dr. Siana Maruf Shafi. She is the director of a medical charity, Kitrinos Healthcare, which is based inside the camp.
So far, no. They are testing suspected cases on the island. So far, there have been 3 that have been confirmed. They're all from the local Greek population. And it is absolutely my worst nightmare to think that we have allowed COVID to enter the camp.
Yeah. I mean, how would you manage if an outbreak did occur?
It's not imaginable, because if you think about all the first line measures that are being implemented around the world, social distancing, well, 20,000, 22,000 people living in a space for 3,000. Most of the tents have the small tents, like a two-person tent might have a family of 4 in it. And a slightly bigger tent, maybe meant for 6 persons, would have between 10 to 15 in it. So forget social distancing. To get basic things like food, they have to queue in a line to go to have a shower, to go to toilets. They have to queue in a line because about 70 people for one sort of wash facility. Hand washing, often the water runs out in the camp. So if the virus is indeed there, it's going to spread incredibly quickly.
The orthodoxy out there, I think, is that the most vulnerable to this have been the elderly in other populations, but also those with underlying conditions. Are there many people like that in your camp?
So through our records, we've been able to identify approximately 500 to 600 individuals who would fit those categories of being high risk. We're trying to coordinate with UNHCR so we can identify them and try to remove them. That's something that we have been trying to propose to various authorities on the island, that perhaps if we could just at least try to minimise the effect this is going to have on the most vulnerable. So they're all vulnerable, but the most vulnerable would be these 600 people, in my opinion. Because the other part of that is, as soon as there's a fatality in the camp, there's so many repercussions. I mean, the people themselves, they're already pretty volatile, agitated, and there are often fights and protests, etc. The islanders are already very stressed out about the fact that they have this unhygienic facility on their island. So many repercussions. So we thought, let's just minimize this. If the ones who are most likely to die, because a death always causes a lot of agitation in the camp, and here we know a killer virus is on its way. And we just don't have responses. I've been writing, I've been trying to call. I guess the government and the authorities, the public health of Greece, are overwhelmed themselves, just like we are over here.
So you think it's a case of when, not if?
I do think it's a case of when, not if.
Dr. Siana Marouf Shafi, a British trained doctor now running a medical charity with Syrian refugees in Lesbos. So it seems it is a powder keg, and that has been acknowledged in many developing countries and indeed by the United Nations. Portugal, for example, has taken a bold step and granted citizenship rights to all migrants and asylum seekers who have residency applications underway in their country. No sign of that, though, in the United States at the moment, where there is rising concern about both asylum seekers and those incarcerated within its prisons. About a quarter of the world's entire prison population, in fact, is within the US correctional system. I discussed this with Dr. Jody Rich. He is director at the Center for Prisoner Health and Human Rights, based at Brown University on Rhode Island. He says all countries need to look urgently now at more progressive systems of early release and parole to prevent a serious outbreak, such as has already been seen in some Chinese and Italian facilities.
We can do whatever we can to prevent it from spreading within correctional settings, but both of those are very difficult. To prevent it from getting in, well, you stop visits, but you still have correctional staff that needs to work there, and they're living in the community, so they're going to get it, and it's going to get in.
The language, of course, that we're all using in our communities now across Europe and North America is one of lockdown. You'd think that a prison environment was, by definition, one of lockdown. Why is it so hard to separate and isolate those who are at risk or who may already have been infected?
Well, many facilities are operating at over 100% capacity. There is simply not enough space inside these facilities. And people have to eat, they have to bathe, and then they have to do something. You could say, well, just lock everybody in their cells. You can do that for a period of time, but at some point people have to get out. There's also reports of correctional officers, correctional staff, and people who are incarcerated getting infected, and they're going to start trickling out, and the fear is that there'll be an avalanche of people coming out all at once into local healthcare settings.
Which is another reason not to release them, isn't it? I mean, I guess there'll be those concerned.
No, it's if you can get them released beforehand, then you can prevent that. And they won't all get infected at the same time, which would put a tremendous stress on the local healthcare settings.
This is a time, obviously, with everybody getting worried, terrified for themselves, for their families, for others in their community. There's a kind of exhaustion of sympathy out there. Tell us why we should be worried so much right now about this particular population, those who've already, I suppose, offended against society.
I've been behind bars every week for the last 25 years, taking care of patients behind bars. And whatever you feel about prisoners or not prisoners, the fact of the matter is the people we know who are at higher risk are the ones that are more likely to end up on a ventilator in a hospital, taking up space that we can ill afford right now. And they are going to get infected all at once unless we can get them out into a non-congregate setting. Many of these people are at the least risk of committing any kind of criminal offense. They're old, they have illness. Those who you can get out who are at high risk, get them out now before this virus gets into that facility. The other reason to decrease the census as much as possible is because if and when it does get into a facility, if you are not at 150% capacity, but you're at 75% capacity, then you'll have the ability to quarantine different groups and keep the spread from going rapidly through the facility. You know, just as cruise ships and nursing homes and college dormitories and military barracks are ideal settings for rapid spread of this virus, so are correctional facilities.
So get them out. That is the message from Dr. Jody Rich of Brown University, ending this edition of Business Daily. That is obviously a subject which is going to be hotly debated in countries around the world. We're going to have more on the medical response to the coronavirus crisis in tomorrow's programme. Justin Rowlatt will be here looking at the various antivirus treatments currently being trialled to tackle the disease. What are the pharmaceutical firms doing to find a cure? For now, from me, wherever you are, stay safe.
Hi, this is Jackie Leonard from the Global News Podcast. A month ago, we made a special edition answering your questions about the coronavirus, and it immediately became one of our most downloaded episodes ever. So, as the virus continues to spread and more countries go into lockdown, we're doing it again. Join me and a panel of BBC correspondents and experts as we take a look at the current situation and how it's affecting people, and examine what we can learn about containing the virus and treating people who have it. To find it, search for Global News Podcast wherever you get your podcasts and look for the special episode released on the 30th of March. That's the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service.